We're getting a chance to visit with Peter from the Partnership for a Drug-Free Iowa. Peter, I guess before we're going to talk about a number of different issues, but we did mention Partnership for a Drug-Free Iowa. Give us a quick explanation of what that organization is about and what it is you try to do from an organizational standpoint.
It was founded over 20 years ago with a team led by Senator Grassley, and then Senator Harkin was involved too. It was a bipartisan project designed to go out into the communities throughout Iowa and find out what the biggest threats and risks were and figure out what resources and assets we could create to help communities fight them. You know, we always looked at Iowa as having great corn and bean crops, cattle and hogs, but the partnership believes the number one crop in Iowa are children. So we're trying to get that same attitude spread throughout the state. I was very fortunate to succeed Senator Grassley as chair of the Face It Together coalition that started all this. And now I'm fortunate to be going out to all the communities and trying to raise awareness of what can be done to protect our children from the things that are hurting them and in some cases killing them.
MoveOn says, what are the issues today? Do they change? What if you had to prioritize, if you do that, what's number one, number two, number three?
I'll tell you what we've really learned, and this is big. When it started out, it was drugs and alcohol. Marijuana, heroin, a little bit of pills. You know, we just sort of knew the landscape. It had been going on since World War II, so we sort of looked at it, then meth came up and things like that. But when we looked and drilled down into the problem, and we work with Iowa State University and have a team of people, sort of a think tank working on these issues, what we realized is what we were looking at was high-risk behavior. It wasn't just drugs. Maybe it was driving too fast. Maybe it was sexting or bullying or playing violent video games. What we saw was that there are a lot of things that children do when they're not happy, or when they're hungry, or when there's poverty in the picture, where they can't get mental health care, you know, or the parents are under some form of stress. Children respond to everything. And when they're under stress, they'll often do things that are risky. Now, there's doctors and neurophysiologists that can tell you why, but what we learned was high-risk behavior across the board. If you stamp one out, kids will gravitate to another one. So when you look at that high-risk behavior, you look at, well, where does the teaching come with kids to handle and cope with stress? It comes from school, it comes from parents, it comes from the faith community. Since the 1950s, with television, video games, and internet, we've got the average 8 to 18 year old child on the internet, video games, and social media 54 hours a week. And when we reduced drinking in Iowa a couple years ago, underage drinking, what do we find? More marijuana use, and here's what's worse, more suicides. So we can look at individual threats, whether it's opioids or heroin or marijuana or alcohol, but we also have to, at the same time, get into the community and see how can we build stronger bonds to work together with our children. So using drug abuse, like the opioid crisis, it's a big crisis now. We've lost 50,000 people in America to drug overdoses last year, 40,000 to traffic accidents. That's number two now in deaths. Half of those were impaired by drugs and alcohol. During the Vietnam War, only 4,000 servicemen died a year. Now, I don't want to minimize the deaths. They were very, very tragic deaths. But 4,000 a year versus 50,000 now. During World War II, we lost 80,000 servicemen a year on the average. So this is a war in our country. It is killing people. But at the same time, it's like a forest fire. We're pouring resources on trying to get people treatment, keep them out of prison, do whatever we can to get them healthy. But we also have to do the prevention work to protect our kids so that they don't become more fuel for that fire.
How do you do that? You got some good strategies. Have you developed anything? Does something work? Or is it a losing battle?
We're really good at doing things right. We humans, we learn our lessons and we move forward. But sometimes when life is too good, we're making too much money, we forget and things happen that get... It's our trouble in our communities, like this opioid crisis, for example. You know, we know that if children are taught properly, and again, this goes back to how much time parents, teachers, and faith leaders have with kids, that if they perceive something's risky and dangerous, just like you and me, they're not going to do it as much. But if they don't think it's dangerous, guess what? Let's give it a try. So part of our responsibility as adults in the community is to give children an understanding of risk, like risk management and finances. You do it with your investments, we need to do it with our children's attitudes too. If we do that, we'll minimize the problems. Now, here's an interesting spin on the opioid crisis, which we've known has been brewing there for a long time. It just went out of control. There's no perception of risk when a doctor gives you a prescription. And in fact, Purdue Pharmaceuticals is fielding a bunch of lawsuits now, is finding out that their subtle or not subtle, whatever the courts determine, inferences that opioids aren't addictive open the door to a huge problem. And it's a bigger problem, we think. A lot of people think because we're talking about opioids now, because we're doing this, that we've got enough water on the fire to put it out. In looking at statistics and models from Disease Control Center and Iowa's public health function, their department has looked at it too, public health and safety, we're probably 5 to 7 years away from a peak of fatalities in America from the opioid crisis and heroin. When you think about how many are dying now, that is scary. It's like a wildfire raging out of control.
Peter, you've talked a lot about kids, and I know some of the local folks have tried to point out in some presentations that at least locally, you mentioned the opioid use and abuse that, and I'm, the locals indicate that there's actually more of an older population in that use and abuse of opioids than there is the younger crowd. Are we forgetting the older, the above the teenager crowd, even into the senior citizen crowd when it comes to that opioid crisis?
That is a great question. No, we're absolutely not. And we're putting the older crowd is part of that fire that's burning. We know that most people that are affected were treated either because of a surgery or an injury with opioids and not given the proper understanding of how risky they were and often used them too long. So I would say that we're doing an excellent job with the older population and doctors prescribing. What we have now is a lot of people that have fallen out of the system and moved on to heroin. And we have children, and this is an important thing. You know, if I go to you and I say, you need to stop taking this medicine because there's been a lawsuit and it's killing people, you're pretty quick to stop taking it. You call your doctor and say, what else can I take? Children are a little slower to get to that. A lot of good reasons for that. Children are learning and they've got to absorb a lot of stuff. So they're being inundated with all sorts of missed messages that, you know, things like marijuana is medicine. Well, it's not medicine because it's not FDA approved. Your doctor can't write a prescription for it and it can't be insured. It can't be paid for by insurance. But we confuse children with those messages. And we confuse children with all sorts of ads. If you watch ads on TV, you can get a pill for better everything, better breathing, better walking, better sleeping, better sex. I mean, there's no limit to the pills you can buy. So right now we're focused on opioids, which we didn't know about 10 or 15 years ago. We had a meth crisis. We didn't know it was there. We worked on it. We had synthetic drug crises. We worked on it. This will not be the last thing that happens. So yes, we are working on it, on the populations that are affected. Doctors are working on it. Insurers are working on it. Public safety and health are working on it because we need to put the fire out and save as many lives as possible. But at the same time, we have to create the educational tools and get the messages out in the communities so that the next most popular drug or most dangerous thing that comes around the bend is something that people have a better sense of critical thinking about instead of just trusting that some medicine's a miracle. You know, we hear this all the time. I mean, the best pain medication in the world is opioids. Guess what happened? Not good things. Now the next thing that cures cancer and everything is marijuana. Guess what's going to happen if people start believing all that stuff? We have to be smart when we put stuff into our body. And we have great doctors. And you know what? Doctors are learning. Doctors didn't know. And they know now, and they're doing a great job of helping the elderly community and adults deal and cope with these strategies. But the problem's a big one.
You mentioned marijuana, Peter. And of course, in Iowa, it did pass, and I don't believe at this point we're doing this show, the governor signed it yet, but the use talking to our local legislators, it's not the smoking of marijuana, but it's the cannabis oil, which is going to be allowed for certain illnesses or ailments. Even though it's not the smoking the marijuana, it's the oil. What's your thoughts on that direction the state's going?
Oh, you're going to love this because this will be on 2020 and other shows. CBD, which is a part of the cannabis plant, cannabidiol, has been approved in trials. Medicines are coming out. They're going to be prescribed by doctors if you qualify to use it. Prescriptions will be covered by insurance. You know, it'll be a traditional medicine. But yet, what's happening in Iowa is CBD, like in other states, has been used as a Trojan horse. They're baiting and switching us. they're saying, well, we don't just need CBD, we need THC, which is the dangerous psychoactive addictive drug that hurts children's brain development, that impairs your judgment and makes it you can't drive or go to work or operate heavy equipment or work in healthcare or medicine or teaching. Or, you know, there's a dangerous component that they're trying to bait and switch, and there's a good reason why. It's CBD on its own, cannabidiol with no THC, is not addictive. THC is addictive. So it's a ticking time bomb. So what really is this is just a Trojan horse, a smokescreen. Everybody wanted to comply, including the governor, for providing CBD. And as soon as we cracked that door open, everybody says, oh, we need THC, we need THC. THC is the secret key to open up CBD's effectiveness. THC cures cancer, THC cures pain. It doesn't do any of that stuff by studies. As a matter of fact, it makes some things worse. But it's the money. That Jerry Maguire, man, follow the money. And when people can corrupt government and influence politicians to put something in play under the guise of it'll get create revenue, it'll give bring in this, it's a business we gotta get into, boy, watch out, because those payoffs aren't gonna be to people like you and me on the street. We're gonna suffer all the indignity of addiction, all the problems with cost and distribution. You know, we've seen this before. Every major industry that's addictive, whether it's tobacco or alcohol, preys on youth and preys on misconception. We know that going out and drinking does not make you healthier or better.
So if you limit it to the oil itself, that may actually have some useful functions.
Yeah, they've done clinical trials right here at University of Iowa Hospitals. It's been approved, but it's gaining approval almost any day now from the FDA. They expect it to be on the market in 8 months. And this is why marijuana people that want to put that addictive drug in the street, and the people trying to legislate that getting on the street because of the profits involved, are rushing and pushing so hard right now and creating all this urgency and creating all these false claims, because they know that once the science comes out, they don't have a leg to stand on. Now, if science comes out someday that you can, and opioids are good for some people and in some cases, but you're not going to drive a car taking them, you're not going to be working taking them. If science comes out that somehow something else in marijuana, even something that might be addictive, in the right prescribed dose under close supervision by a doctor, not because you or I think it's going to work for us, well, that's a whole different story. That means the FDA approved it, doctors know about it, and pharmacies can distribute it. But we don't have that situation now.
Your discussion, maybe one quick question, is some of these things you talk about, the opioids, the medical cannabis, oil, whatever, are we moving a little bit away from, for lack of a better term, the street corner drug buys versus the medical use? How do you compare the two? If that's a fair question, because there probably was a perception years ago that drug use and abuse was the people who went and bought it on the street corner, to be quite, if that's the right terminology. But now you talked about a lot of that prescription area, or people think it's okay.
Well, you're right. It's a good point. I was just on a panel on KCCI in Des Moines about the opioid crisis, and there was a doctor, Dr. Zachary, there, who I had a chance to speak to before, and he made some great comments on the show too, that he often prescribes opioids in a limited case to patients that need it. And he's surprised at how often when he does his toxicology screens, they come back and they have none of the opioids in their bloodstream, which means they're redirecting. People are getting opioids and selling them. So we don't call those people drug dealers, but that's what they're doing. And they're taking these drugs and redirecting, because you can get $5, $10, $50, $100 a pill on the street. So if your insurance gets you a prescription that costs you $4 for 50 pills or 90 pills or 30 pills, boy, that's tempting to people that don't have a lot of money. So we're finding that your dealers, we learned this about meth dealers. We looked at major manufacturers, the busted meth labs, and they had meth dealers in major companies, people that worked there that were selling to coworkers. You know, the idea with social media now and all the ways people could connect, it's not just drug cartels. It's anybody wanting to make a little extra money. And in Colorado, they're finding that there's as much or more marijuana sold or redistributed illegally, especially to kids, than is sold legally, because people don't want to pay taxes on it. The businesses want to sort of do under the table stuff. So it's a difficult thing when you have something addictive that can command a high price. Boy, you need a lot of regulation, you need a lot of supervision, and you need a lot of public taxpayer dollars to oversee it, something that Iowa doesn't have a lot of extra of.
Peter, we get wrap things up quickly. I know it's obviously you have a lot of passion for this subject. Quickly, you have a chance. If 7:20 wants to come down and talk to you directly, one-on-one, they got that chance this afternoon to do that. Tell us what you hope to do.
Yeah, we've got two great things going on. Tomorrow we have two listening posts, one in Clinton at Clinton Community College from 1 to 2:30, and we're going to have the National Guard Drug Task Force there, the Department of Justice, people from the governor's office, and myself, and it's a listening post for the community to share their ideas with us. We're also going to be in DeWitt at the Clinton County Sheriff's Satellite Office from 5:30 to 7 p.m. tomorrow. But today, in Clinton, at 392 Cafe on 2nd Street, from 3:30 to 4:30, I'm inviting people to show up and talk about marijuana specifically and what their thoughts are, what they believe, and, you know, to get some information shared, because there's a good side and a dark side, and I think it'd be a good time for people that want to ask questions about marijuana to come by 392 Cafe at 3:30 today, and let's chat a little bit and see what they think.
Look for you there. Peter Komandowski,
did
we get that name right?
Yeah,
Partnership for a Drug-Free Iowa. Stop at 392 Cafe this afternoon, Clinton Community College Technology Center tomorrow, and the DeWitt County Satellite Office tomorrow evening, if they want to give their input that way. But one-on-one this afternoon, and hopefully people can come down. Maybe they don't like that group setting. Maybe they like the one-on-one. Also, if they got some questions, Kristen Housingate, 563-241-4371. She wrote down her number, so we'd remember to mention that. If they got some quick questions, especially about those listing posts, give Kristen a call. In fact, Kristen was on our show last Thursday talking about a various number of drug issues, including those listing posts. So thanks for coming in today, taking a little time. I know you got a lot of things. You probably meet with a lot of folks this couple days here in Clinton.
It's been fun. Thanks for having me, Dave, and keep doing the good work you're doing in the community. We appreciate it.